Hey, soccer fans and sons of a pitch people, SO peeps, my favorite people in all of the MLS community. I am Nick, and we are back here at SOP Soccer Central. We are doing our weekly MLS recap, and it's the night of Monday, August 8th. And wow, friends, viewers, listeners, this last week of MLS games was pure chaos. This was a historical week for offense. August 6th had the most goals in a single day in MLS history, 57 goals over 13 games. That's about 4.4 goals per game. Also, seven games had at least five goals, the most in any single day in MLS history as well. And actually, if you take that first goal from the Chicago-Charlotte game, which was the 6 o'clock kickoff on Saturday, to the last goal of the Portland-Dallas game, the last game of the night, the league was averaging a goal every 6 minutes. I don't know how we could possibly fit all of it into one show tonight to recap, but we are certainly going to try. One other tidbit of news, a bit of trivia for you. None of the four top East Conference teams actually won, and only three of the four Western Conference teams, they also lost, right? So it was a topsy-turvy day as well, and we're going to break down all the scores in the first half of the show. And then in the second half of the show, assuming that I can get my speech back together a little bit, I think I'll work my way into it, just like, you know, a striker in a slump here. You just got to keep shooting. In the second half of the show, we are going to look at all the transfers. We're going to do a complete transfer roundup from this summer window because there were a lot of moves that were made. Some teams decided to stand pat, and we'll see how that can affect their season. But we are going to look at that in the second half of the show. And then, of course, if we have time at the end, we are going to get into some questions from our viewers in our live chat. So, without further ado, let's kick it off with that intro music. Hey, soccer fans. Once again, I am Nick for Sons of a Pitch, Soccer Central. That's all I needed. Just a little bit of that music to get me back in the rhythm here as we look at all of the games from MLS in August 2nd through the 6th. And there were a lot of games and there were a lot of goals, like I said in the opening, and historic. I don't know. English was never my favorite language, right? I don't know. A historic week in MLS goal scoring, right? Before we get into all the action, I want to remind you, if you want to support the show, please follow along on Twitter at SOP Soccer, like the video, subscribe to the video, share it, grow the conversation around the sport in America and in MLS. And if you really like what we're doing and want to, you know, help us continue to do what we do, support the show financially, you can make a donation via a super chat here live on YouTube or a super thanks after the video has already aired. You can also reach out to us about potential sponsorships or other sort of donations. Again, direct message on Twitter at SOP Soccer, or you can email us podcast@sonsofapitchsoccer.com. And in fact, every dollar that we get goes right back into the show, right? We use it for streaming fees, for cameras and microphones. We're actually developing a website right now, and hopefully we can provide you even more content as we ramp up towards World Cup 2022 as well. That way we can provide you even more coverage of the beautiful game of the world's game. Now, looking at the scores from this week, let's get right into it today. There's one game all the way back, Tuesday, August 2nd. And man, what a game that was to kick things off. Red Bulls fall to Colorado by a score of 4-5. Incredible 9-goal thriller. Now, what are people saying about this game? Is this indicative of the Red Bull season? Is this indicative of the Rapid season? No, it's definitely not. In my opinion, this is a total outlier, right? People are saying, though, that the Red Bulls' high-energy, high-pressing style is really starting to slow down in these summer months, in these dog days of MLS summer that people have referred to over the league's two-decade-plus history. That might be the case. But really, if you look at it, the Red Bulls have only conceded 3 goals or more in 2 prior MLS games, though one of them did come recently. And another one non-MLS game in the U.S. Open Cup where they gave up 5 to Orlando City, the one game where Orlando City actually found their offense. More on that to come. So I guess the jury is still out, in my opinion, on whether or not the Red Bulls are kind of pressing themselves into exhaustion as the season goes on. Regardless, whatever Robin Fraser said to get his team pumped up for this game, they better bottle it and save it for the rest of the season, because for Colorado to get that 5-4 victory, man, an incredible performance by them. We got to quickly say hello to Jonathan Bond 14 in the chat. Hey, bro, how are you today? Great to see you in the chat again, Jonathan Bond. Welcome back. Hopefully you got to enjoy some of the matches. I see by your LA Galaxy crest there, you probably weren't too happy with the Galaxy's result, but all in all, it was an exciting game for them versus Sporting Kansas City and some great stuff from around the league this weekend. So as we continue our weekly recap, you had Seattle taking on FC Dallas, and this was a game where Dallas was coming in to try and maintain their position in the Western Conference standings, see if they could get their offense clicking again, scoring 2, 3, 4 goals again like they have been in the past. And this was a game for Seattle now to try and get back into the playoff picture. And Seattle actually comes away with it 1-0. Seattle with the victory at home. They had been in a bit of a slump, but you cannot count Seattle out. And as I always say when it comes to MLS, you are what you are until you're not. And in this case, Seattle, with the penalty kick from Ladero in the 39th minute, Seattle is a playoff team and a threat to win the MLS Cup every season until they are not. So we got to keep thinking Seattle is going to make a run and make up those points somehow. Now we move into Wednesday, August 3rd, where Charlotte hosts DC United. Now, we know Charlotte had maybe a little extra time off because of the cancellation or the postponement of their game at Columbus due to inclement weather. So maybe they had a little bit of fresh legs. Maybe they were just excited and anxious to get some energy out. But it absolutely worked for them, defeating DC at home 3-0. Now, Charlotte has relied on their home form this season to keep them in the playoff picture. After this week's worth of games, which does include one to Chicago, Charlotte has ended up 8-4 at home, 8 wins, 4 losses at home. And you see, they got an own goal to kick things off. Karol Swiderski gets one in the 64th, and McNeil gets the third one in the 67th minute. So you've got their DP, Karol Swiderski, playing well, finding the back of the net. And we had said it early on in the season and in these shows that if he is scoring, if he's feeling good, you remember there was a lot of issue with him and their coach, Miguel Angel Ramirez, I believe, you know, and that's, he didn't want to play. And that partly led to the coach being ousted. And now that that has kind of settled a bit, you can see Swiderski getting back on the score sheet, getting comfortable once again, and leading Charlotte maybe to their first ever playoff appearance in their first season. Next, we have Columbus hosting Montreal, and everything was great until the rain came down, and we had another rain delay, inclement weather delay for Columbus when they were up 2-1. And then Montreal takes full advantage of that break, gathers themselves, and puts together like a final 15, 20 minutes for the ages here, and ends up getting the win with Kamara in the 88th to equalize it. And then Waterman seals it in stoppage time for Montreal, and they move back up the standings as well. Got to be heartbreaking for Crew fans. And I don't know what to tell you. I mean, between Zellerán and Cucho, like, there's not much you can say. They have had a great second half of their season so far. I think you just got to chalk up these games to the weather and move on. And then hopefully whenever they reschedule the game against Charlotte, they can take advantage of it and go on to win that one. We got a couple more people in the chat. Dan Gehringer, good evening. He says, I thought Dallas played a good game. And yeah, Dan, why don't we jump back up and take a look at some of the stats there, and we'll see what Dallas ended up doing. I didn't get a chance to watch that full match, but let's see what Dallas did, because you're right. I think Dallas probably did play a pretty good game. I have not known them to really fall on their faces at all this season, as long as they but they just got to find the back of the net, right? And we've got a new Wiseman in the chat that says, yeah, at the death. We're seeing a lot of these. I don't know. Do you guys think that the league is saying, like, yeah, let's let this play out and we'll see? Or do you just think it's that great momentum and the officiating saying, hey, let's let it play out till the end of this offensive sequence? Maybe it has to do with players maybe trying to milk the clock a little bit and the referees not having it. And the end of the game, you know, that gamesmanship, that fifth sub making the slow walk out, or the guys rolling around just a little bit extra to milk it. Maybe the referees are not going to have it. Well, Dan, here we go, man. We have Seattle only with 55% of the possession, but Dallas did have three shots on goal. Their passing was actually pretty good, 82% on the night. And you can see they were getting forward with seven crosses and 13 corners. Maybe not as much as they would have liked. You see teams like Chicago with Zdeněk Chychrun, who's whipping crosses in. They're getting sometimes over 20 crosses in a game. But here, you look at 16 clearances, 14 fouls, and a yellow card. You can see that for portions of the game, they were on the defensive. They were getting into the box, looking at the shot chart. They did have some threatening shots inside the box here. But a lot of these long-distance shots that were blocked, I don't know what the players are trying to create in that instance. Now let's take a quick look down at the passing statistics here. Only 67% in the final third. So they must have had a hard time creating opportunities. And let's see. Yeah, look at that. Second half is when they had the bulk of their possession, but they weren't able to do really anything with it. And their expected goals show it. Expected goals only 0.5 for Dallas. So not a very good offensive night for Dallas, despite having a very respectable kind of possession of the game there. So Dan, thanks for bringing that up. You're right. They did play a pretty good game, just couldn't get it going in the final third. We also have Brother BKL jumping in the chat. Salutations to everyone in SOP Soccer Fam. Brother BKL, always great to have you with us, my friend. We're about to get to some of your New York City stuff here in just a few minutes. We wrapped up the Charlotte DC game. Again, I'm disappointed in DC. I thought maybe they could continue some of that Wayne Rooney momentum, maybe get Toxie Fountas back on the score sheet, but not. We saw Columbus fall to Montreal. We also had a couple exhibition games this week. Galaxy hosting Chivas Guadalajara in a League's Cup showcase as well down here. LAFC hosting Club America in another League's Cup showcase. Galaxy get two goals and a win. Can't say that about them in the MLS regular season much. But they do it in an exhibition match against Chivas. Meanwhile, LAFC draws Club America 0-0 and then falls 6-5 in PKs on that exhibition. For those of you following the MLS, the League's Cup is a competition between Liga MX and MLS. It was on hiatus this year, but next year we're going to see an expanded number of teams. I think there's going to be 8 teams from each league that are going to be kind of matched up against each other in kind of a bracket-style knockout. Almost a mini Champions League, maybe, but just for Liga MX and MLS. A lot of people are saying this is great. We can measure ourselves against the best league in the region. A lot of people are saying this is a terrible idea. Why would we want to put more games on the schedule? Why would we want to de-emphasize CCL? Is this just a setup to a merger for a Super League? You know, I kind of lean on that side of things. I love as a fan more soccer, and I love that we're playing, that the MLS is playing matches against Liga MX. But at the same time, we already have plenty of congestion in the schedule, especially if things get back to normal with the international breaks over the next few seasons. So I wonder how much or how long lived we're going to see the League's Cup. Who knows? We'll see what it holds in store. I know the guys over on MLS really pump it up. Andrew Wiebe of MLSsoccer.com really pumps it up, but you know, he's paid to do it. So I haven't heard too many people outside of the league actually promoting it. One of the next matches we have to cover, Portland hosted Nashville, drawing 1-1. Now, Portland and Nashville were kind of interesting to me. I think they played each other recently, just a couple of weeks back as well. And Portland at home, I would have expected them to win this game. And I would have expected this to be a much higher scoring affair given their recent run of form for both teams. But they end up with the draw. I think it's, you know, maybe a respectable result for a couple teams trying to move up in the playoff rankings. But at the same time, I would have expected it to be a much higher scoring game. I still think Portland is working to figure out some of their offensive issues, especially with Felipe Mora going out for the season. And Nashville just kind of seemed to have hit a snag right in the middle of the season. Now, we have a Nashville supporter who's jumped in our chats and our comments on these videos previously. He's saying a lot of people are upset about Gary Smith down in Nashville, especially calling out his players recently. So maybe there's some turmoil in the training grounds that's translating over to the results side of things. Want to give a quick shout out as well to Height Hagger saying, what's up, everyone? Hi, Hagger. It's been a while. Great to have you back with us. How'd you enjoy all of the matches this weekend? Oh, real quick, a new Wiseman says it's all the teams, talking back to Leagues Cup. You've got all the MLS teams jumping in. Dan Gehringer likes the idea. Okay, maybe I'm in the minority here, guys. He even says, look at all the games played in the EPL. You're absolutely right, Dan. The EPL plays tons and tons of games. They have the regular season, the top teams are playing in Champions League and Europa League, as well as two different domestic cups. But you got to remember as well, no salary caps to a certain degree. There are financial fair play rules. And they have just developed huge networks of players and deep, deep benches where I don't think the MLS is there yet. So I think we're going to see this similar to some of the US Open Cup, where some of these MLS teams may not be emphasizing it, and you may see them running out their youth teams, essentially. But you know what? As a fan, you love more soccer. That's for sure. All right. And you're right, Dan. National teams play as well. So that's going to be even more, especially for the United States and MLS players, where we're actually getting a number of U.S. national team players in the MLS. They're going to have a few more games and run into some minutes restrictions, possibly. Anyway, Connor Knows Soccer has joined us as well. Hey, Connor, great to have you with us, man. We actually just wrapped up that Columbus-Montreal recap. So you're perfect timing, Mr. Crew fan, to come in right after that loss recap. Anyway, moving on in the full league recap, San Jose hosts Inter Miami, falls 1-0 in that game. Guys, I can't figure out San Jose. I know I've said it before. Are they scoring goals or are they bleeding goals? Are they doing both? Like, nothing makes sense about how they play out their season, whether it was with Matias Almeida and his man-marking style and his very kind of chaotic offense, run at him type of style, or without. And they're actually trying to make some moves, as we'll see in the second half of the show talking transfers. They're either scoring and winning goals in high-scoring affairs, drawing games, or they are, you know, doing this, losing 1-0 to Miami with D'Souza getting the goal for them there. Now we finally move into this weekend. Some things from recent memory here. Vancouver hosting and defeating Houston Dynamo 2-1. Now this was a heck of a game, guys. And Jay, you always have a habit of jumping in when I talk about Vancouver. Jay Jardim in the house. What is up, my friend? Great to have you with us. This Vancouver-Houston game was a crazy one, and crazy in favor of the Whitecaps, right? You had Picault score an odd goal in the sixth minute where was it a chip pass? And he kind of jumped in there and maybe gave it a little bit of a flick. The goalkeeper thought Picault was going to redirect the shot to the far post, but rather kind of went through his legs and like hit the back of his calf and ended up trickling in the near post. So the keeper got caught flat-footed, and that was in the sixth minute. And then it was just back-and-forth soccer for a long time. I'm trying to think if this was the game when I was taking my notes that not much going on in the midfield here. But Vancouver sticks with it, and this is the sign of a team that has improved, especially under coach Vanni Sartini, who has got them believing in themselves, who has got an identity for this team. They're going to grind it out. And Jay even says it. You could see that comeback coming. They were never out of this game despite conceding early. And they end up with an equalizer in the 88th minute from Beecher or Becker. I don't know. Let me know how to pronounce it, right, guys? And then Cavallini, who else? The star scoring in the 92nd minute of stoppage time to get the 3 points, Vancouver, as they continue their climb up the table. Now we're going to continue on into Saturday. We have Atlanta hosting Seattle, and I did not see this game coming either, right? Atlanta wins. I know they're at home, and Atlanta is an excellent home team. Atlanta gets the 2-1 victory over Seattle just when we think Seattle is coming back into form, right? And they end up dropping another road game. Now, I guess the only good thing for Seattle is that this was a cross-conference game, so they're not, like, losing ground to a team within the league. But go find the highlights of this one, because not only did Cisneros have a really good goal in the 23rd to put Atlanta up before Seattle equalizes with Roldan in the 68th, the Gutman goal, 94th minute, stunner. Go find it. Take a look at it. That has turned into an excellent signing by Atlanta, getting Andrew Gutman, right? And his long story journey, gosh, we could do an entire podcast or YouTube episode on just the travels of Gutman from like Red Bull to Celtic to maybe Cincinnati to Atlanta. Like, he has been all over, and there were some weird MLS roster rules in there as well that helped it out. But good for Atlanta staying playoff relevant. I'm not sure they're going to actually make the push into the seventh spot, but they are staying playoff relevant and giving their fans something to cheer for. The one other thing about Atlanta we wanted to mention here, Darren Eales, the GM over there, has taken a position at Newcastle in the EPL as the CEO. So we got this great shot here from Anu Wiseman. You can follow along on Twitter with him. His handle, Anu Wiseman, his name, Indomitable Lion. Love it. So showing a picture, Darren Eales celebrating his 50th birthday before he goes. Just a big party with him and the fans, and how he had influenced Cincinnati, how he influenced Charlotte based on what he did in Atlanta, bringing them immediately to the forefront of this league and being immediately relevant, both in on-the-field play as well as in the marketplace there. So Darren Eales, wishing him the best of luck, and we'll see what direction Atlanta goes. People are actually saying Bocanegra might be on the hot seat now that Eales is out. As we continue on the recap, we had Charlotte falling at home. Again, now they are 8-4 at home. To Chicago, 3-2. Great match by Chicago. You're going to hear a lot more of this from our good friend, longtime Fire fan, as well as a supporter of this show, John Donovan. If you're on the podcast, when we take our halftime break, you will hear John Donovan's recap on this game. For those of you on the YouTube channel, let me just tell you this, right? Charlotte has relied on their home form, and they're starting to slip. You lose that game, they're now out of the playoff picture. On the other side of the pitch, Shaqiri and Chicago's offense are rounding into form, but their back line has been decimated. They lost their starting center back at the beginning of the season. Wyatt Omsberg comes in, and he gets hurt. Carlos Duran comes in, and he gets hurt. Right now, it's all on the legs and knees of 37-year-old Johnny Bornstein and Mauricio Pineda when he's not filling in for D-mid positions as well. So hopefully that back line can keep it together as they make a run to the playoffs. Next matchup, Cincinnati hosts Philadelphia 3-1. Great win for Cincy, getting back in the win column, finding the offense. For Philly, normally I would be worried about this loss after their great run of form, but they lost to Cincy, a team that they could see in the playoffs. So they're going to really have to look at this tape of this game to make sure they don't have a repeat of that in the playoffs. Now we got Columbus Crew hosting and beating the New York City FC 3-2. Excellent result for the Crew, especially coming off the back of a loss after a rain delay and a postponement because of inclement weather. This was excellent, and we have been seeing just exactly what the Cucho Hernandez signing means, because we have Zellerayan with two goals. He is finding his offense now. When Hernandez came, he was really setting him up, being the assist man, and they worked very well together. But now Zellerayan is finding his own offense. Suarez gets the one for gets the first one for the Crew as well. Now we look at on the New York City side of things. They get an own goal in the third minute. Good for Columbus, not folding or buckling. And then Dos Santos with the second one in the 64th minute to keep things relevant for NYCFC. But they could not find the winner. Now NYCFC, they're struggling a bit since Tati was loaned over to Girona. And yes, it was a loan. I know we had said transfer in some of our shows in the past, but they weren't. NYCFC and City Football Group wasn't getting the money they wanted for a transfer, so they end up loaning to Girona that just got promoted to Serie A in La Liga. So did I say Serie A in La Liga? What am I thinking? The Spain's top flight. And that way they can keep it within City Football Group, loaning him there. Let's move on before I stumble over another turn of phrase here. DC draws Red Bull. Red Bull scores four goals in a loss, then 0-0. DC with one of the top transfers of the original offseason, not the summer transfer window, and Taxi Fuentes, still 0-0. I'm confused. I'm puzzled. I'm moving on. Montreal, 2-2 draw with Miami. I did not expect that one. I thought Miami was going to go and take advantage of some of the odd play that Montreal had, that emotional comeback win over Columbus, but it ends up being a 2-2 draw. Now, here's one that really puzzled me, right? Orlando falls at home to New England 3-0. I thought Orlando had addressed their offensive needs. Joachini kind of gets in some more reps, gets some more training sessions in. I thought Orlando was going to make a concerted effort to play better offensively. And then being a home team against a struggling New England team, I really thought that they would be able to get back on track in this game. But hey, prove me wrong, Orlando. Don't score anything at home. Continue to fall out of playoff relevance. And I just want to double check the New England scores here, because we know New England had their new DP signing, Veroni, but he did not get on the score sheet at least. Polster, Captain, and Kessler get the goals for New England. Now, here was the big game for our host, good friend Mike, right? Nashville hosting Toronto, and I really thought Nashville was going to take this one, right? They had been, kind of treading water. Average results, mediocre play, not getting the goals. But when Nashville scores three at home, you think they're going to win the game. Nope. Lorenzo Insigne opens his account for TFC. TFC gets four goals for the away win. And we got to quickly show here some of the pictures that Mike had done. Go find his video on our channel here, Sons of a Pitch Soccer Central on YouTube. He actually has about 20 to 30 minutes of him in the stands watching the game, chanting. His kids are going nuts when the goals are getting scored. He's interacting with the other fans. You know, they're the away team, right? So he's up in the stands. You get a great view of everything, as you can see there. Go check out his video. It's fantastic. Just the energy that you can feel both in Geodis Park as a whole and in the TFC away section. We got some great pictures. Look at that view in the evening of the stadium, and then of course away, and Mike and his beautiful family there. So Mike, thanks for sending those pictures out, man. Glad you had a great time. And Mike wanted to express his thanks for everyone who's been reaching out to him, sending him messages over these last few weeks. It really does mean a lot, and just goes to show the kind of people that we have in our chat and with our friends here. And yep, Jay is right. Mike made it big time on the TFC show social. You're right. Now, if you guys want to follow some TFC news, go follow Jay on Twitter. And yeah, the actual Toronto FC Twitter account put out a few fan pictures from the stands, and it was Mike and his kids that got on there. So definitely getting noticed. Just wish he would have had on his Sons of a Pitch shirt for that picture. No, it's all right. Keep the TFC jersey on. And Brother BK is right. Richie Larea returned in that game. So a couple of headlines, a couple of players coming in. But guys, while we're approaching a half hour, we got to get rolling on here. SKC 4-2 over the LA Galaxy. And I really wanted to address the Eric Tommy signing. Could really pay dividends for Sporting Kansas City. He's a 27-year-old attacking mid winger from Germany. Spent his whole career in Bundesliga, Bundesliga 2. And should be a really nice compliment to Russell. If he's on one side, Russell on the other, they'll have attacking options on both sides. Whereas we've seen SKC, I don't want to say be one-dimensional, but maybe one-directional with everything flowing towards Johnny Russell and allowing the opposing defense to really lock down on him. Now, what was I saying about San Jose either not doing anything or scoring a bunch of goals in a draw? Yep, Austin, San Jose, 3-3. We knew Austin was going to score. Hopefully you guys bet the over on this one. And on the next one, Colorado, 4-3 victory at home over Minnesota. I guess when I said they need to bottle up what they did in that first game and do it again, they certainly had the same thought. Now, the next match, really the only predictable one, I think, for the entire weekend. The only predictable result we all got right, at least. LAFC traveled to Real Salt Lake and win that game 4-1. And then we wrap up the weekend. Another Portland draw. I wonder how many draws Portland has had lately. Portland drawing Dallas 1-1. Well, with that, folks, that is our recap for the first half of the show. We're going to take a short break, and in the second half of the show, we are going to come back and do a complete summer transfer window roundup. We'll let you know what your teams did and what they're looking to do moving forward this season. For those of you on the podcast side, stay tuned for John Donovan and his weekly Chicago Fire recap brought to you by Skira Icelandic Spring Water. We'll be back in just a minute.
This MLS Weekly Recap is sponsored by Skira Icelandic Spring Water, available at your local 7-Eleven. Icelandic for clear, Skira water comes from a spring in a nature preserve in Iceland with naturally low mineral content. This isn't your average water. Clearly, yes, pun intended, it's one of the best. Get some Skira today at your local 7-Eleven. And now it's time for our weekly Chicago Fire update brought to you by John Donovan. Take it away, John.
Nick, John Donovan here talking about the MLS and the Chicago Fire. What a weekend, Nick. The Fire walked out of Charlotte with a 3-2 win in a game where there was a lot of early surprises. 38 seconds into the game, Charlotte scores off of a header where Sekulik lost his man. Bingo, score. It was a header that Slonina did not have a chance at. So 38 seconds, you're thinking, oh my Lord, in front of a big house. What else is going to happen? Well, they put the lineup up on the TV a little bit late, and the starting back side was Navarro, Bornstein, Pineda, Sekulik. Who was gone? Our German superstar, Sejos. He was gone. I mean, he's out on virus or something. They didn't fly him off to the game. So Bornstein, who had been out all week with the virus issues, came in and played like the pro that he is at 37 or 38 years old. Magical 90 minutes. The guy, between him and Pineda, I got to say both those guys were the players of the game for the Fire. Although there was a lot of guys that put in time for this game. Chakire, he's finally looking like the $8 million man that we thought he was. He got two beautiful assists this game and he played. I mean, he was playing defensively, offensively. He sort of engages the referees a bit too much, but that's I guess, his style. But the game itself just kept going back and forth. It went into the halftime tied 2-2. Chabilko scored on a beautiful rebound, which he just blasted left-footed by the goalie. And then Federico Navarro scored on a beautiful goal assisted by Chakiri. So we go into the second half, and I mean, honestly, it looked hot. They had a water break, which means it was a steaming place. And down the Chakiri got the ball on the left side, and he crossed. I mean, it must have been a 40-yard cross to a streaking Chabilko down the right side. Chabilko took it in, went right, went left. The defender got a little confused and laid that ball in for a 3-2 game. Just amazing. You know, when you watch, when guys say this word, soccer conditioning, it's at a level of conditioning that's beyond, I think, any other sport. You don't see hockey players or football players or baseball players with the conditioning level that a soccer guy is in. I mean, Federico Navarro, he never stopped. He was knocked out almost on a header. He's back in seconds. Soccer players are of a different level when you talk about conditioning. It just was amazing. So Bornstein and Pineda had to open up the game at fullback because that's virtually, other than a rookie, all we have. And that's, I don't know what's going to happen in the future, but that's what we had. And Bornstein, our 37-year-old guy, played lights out good, and so did Pineda. I mean, they cover for each other. They're both smart players. Right at the end of the 90th minute, the game went into, I think, 95 minutes, but Bornstein made a mistake at about the 91st minute. He went in, and the guy got past him. And Pineda came out of no place and bollocks up the shot, or the game would have been a tied game. It was very exciting. On another instance with Pineda, our guy from Bolingbrook, which I'm always going to say, right early in the game, there was a long cross. I don't know how he got in there because he was playing fullback. He almost stuck that ball away in the corner of the goal. So he had an outstanding game. Chakiri had an outstanding game. Two assists that were just beautiful. Chibilko. I mean, literally, if there's any decision or wonderment who should be the starting center forward for this team, it's Chibilko. I'll say this right now. They should stick with him. Federico Navarro as a midfielder, lights out. The guy is tough, strong. He's always on the edge of a card, but he seems to learning how to work these referees in the MLS. Jimenez was Jimenez. He didn't do a darn thing in this game. Literally, they took him out at 60th minute, put in Herbers, and I think that's the way they should go. He is just not into the MLS or the Chicago Fire. Hate to say that, but you know, you go back to Miguel Navarro from Venezuela. He played a lights out tough game. Also, he's always got his nose, the smallest guy out there, and he's got his nose in every kind of rough play that the game's got to offer. Bornstein, smart. He made that kind of mistake at the end of the game, but overall, you know, when Ezra put him out there, because that's all he had, he knew he had steady, knowledgeable player. What he doesn't have because of youth, he's got smarts. Pineda, I mean, literally, this team needs a guy like Pineda. Him and Herbers, although Pineda is a bit better. I just can't talk enough about it. Sekulak, he played an all right game. He blew that first goal that should have been stopped, but he didn't pay attention. It seemed like the game started and he didn't start. He was about a minute late from the whistle. Slonina played a very good game at goalie. I'm going to hate to see this guy over in Chelsea, although it might force me into watching some of the Premier League games. The game of the match, the player of the match, I got to do two guys. It'd be Bornstein and Pineda. I mean, those two just covered for each other, smart. I mean, what does Bornstein weigh? He looks like he weighs maybe 147 pounds, and he's taking on these big dudes that are lightning quick, and he's doing it with his brains. So a good game. The substitution, Torres didn't really do much in this game. I mean, I don't know. He's had some good games, had some bad games. Mueller had a good game. I thought he had a goal, but a goalie made an outstanding play. Chibilko played well. Backside Navarro, Bornstein, Pineda were outstanding players. Sekulak, hey, you know, you got what you got. We'd love to see a good right fullback come in or winger, but that's what it is. Next week is Philly in Philly, guys. So everybody, sit on the edge of your seat because this is going to be an interesting ending. Right now, as it stands, the Fire are in the playoffs. So take care, Nick. And Mike, hope to see you back soon, dude. Take care.
Thanks for that Chicago Fire update, John. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, soccer fans and SO peeps, we are back in the second half of our show. Before we get into the transfer news, we're going to take a quick look at the standings, as we always do to kick off the second half here. Not much changed at the top of the Eastern Conference, with Philly now in the top spot, NYC, Montreal, and Red Bulls rounding out 2 through 4, but we've seen some movement in the 5 through 12 range. So 5, 6, and 7, Columbus, Cincinnati, and Chicago getting back above the playoff line for the first time in what feels like an eternity. We saw Orlando fall out of that spot, followed by Miami, New England, Charlotte, Atlanta. Those are your teams through 12. Now, we do have to point out, because it's been a tight race all year, that number 5, Columbus, is on 33 points, and number 12, Atlanta, is on 28 points. And I know you TFC fans on 26 points are still holding out hope for a late run if your Italians can get those goals in the back of the net. Now let's take a look at the Western Conference. Again, LAFC and Austin in the 1-2 spot. LAFC expanding their lead a little bit on the supporter shield. And then Dallas and Minnesota in the 3 and 4 spot. Minnesota with a bit of a slip when they lose to Colorado. Now, RSL, Nashville, and Portland do round out the playoff spots in the 5, 6, and 7 positions. So Portland kind of holding serve there with Seattle, who is just outside of the playoffs in the 8th spot on 32 points. But similar to the Eastern Conference, it is tight. If you look at number 3, Dallas, on 36 points, you go to number 11, Vancouver, on 30 points. So 6 points separates the 3rd through 11th spot in the West. I don't know if Houston, San Jose, or SKC have a mathematical, I mean, mathematically they're not eliminated, but I don't know if they actually will have any sort of chance to make a run into a seven spot. So we are looking right now at a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 team race for the last five spots in the West. It's going to be exciting. Gosh, when people say you need promotion and relegation to have an exciting season, yeah, take a look at this playoff race. Anyway, that's another episode. We'll get to it another time. We are now in the second half of our show, and we are going to, first of all, thank our sponsor and good friend John Donovan and Skira Icelandic Spring Water. If you have not gone out to your local 7-Eleven and grabbed a few bottles, please go ahead and do so. It is fantastic. I wish I had a bottle with me right now just to kind of soothe the vocal cords a little bit and help me get into the final half of the show. John, thank you. I'm glad you're having a good time watching the fire string some wins together and score some goals. Also, since we're talking about money and sponsorships, I'll remind you, if you want to support what we do, if you like what we do, entertaining you, you know, for hours every week, putting out original MLS content here on SOP Soccer Central, send us a super chat, send us a super thanks, or if you want to discuss other ways to donate to help out the channel, or maybe have a paid sponsorship, you can direct message us on Twitter at SOP Soccer or email us podcast@sonsofapitchsoccer.com. Like I said, we're getting a new website design and we'll be able to feature any future sponsors there as well. Now, it is transfer time and it is rapid fire time because we have a lot of transfers to go through. We're going to hit it alphabetically, starting with Atlanta United. And as you can see here, they have a number of transfers that they have made throughout this season. Players coming in on the left-hand column, players going out on the right-hand column. We are going to focus on the inbound players who are going to make an impact for Atlanta. Now, Atlanta didn't have any giant signings. I think the biggest signing that they did have was forward Edwin Mosquera coming in from Independiente Medellin. But it is nice to see that they've added a homegrown player. I think they're just looking to kind of build out this roster to play out the rest of the season, fill the holes for a lot of their injuries. And hey, if they can make if they can squeak into the playoffs there, then that would be a good season for Atlanta, all things considered. Now we move on down to Austin FC. Again, a lot of moves, not surprising from a second year team throughout the season, but in the summer transfer window, we see Washington Corozo come in from Sporting Cristal, as well as forward Emiliano Rigoni, a transfer in from Sao Paulo. Now, they don't need offense, right? We know they're scoring goals, so it looks to be more depth moves, but also we got to note that Cecilio Dominguez, who is kind of a higher profile player for them, has mutually parted ways with the team. So maybe they're trying to fill in a roster spot and build some depth to keep that offense going. And if they do want to play more of a pressing style in certain games, then you've got some young, fresh legs for that. Next up, Charlotte FC. As the expansion team, they obviously have done a lot of work and all their expansion draft players are here on this great resource from MLSsoccer.com, their transfer tracker. But we want to take a look at some of the recent stuff that they've done, signing midfielder Brian Romero, their first ever homegrown, a 16-year-old. He is going to be key for consistency for Charlotte going forward. They also signed defender Nathan Byrne on a free, as well as midfielder Nuno Santos on a transfer from Benfica over in Portugal. So he could have an immediate impact as well, helping them maybe stabilize some of their offense so they're not so dependent on Carl Swiderski finding the back of the net and giving Charlotte any sort of chance to win a game. Now, Chicago, we're not going to talk about any transfers in because they really didn't have any over this summer window, right? They haven't made any moves in since signing Chris Mueller back in May and bringing in homegrown Justin Reynolds. Really, the biggest news for Chicago is the outgoing stuff. And I'll make the exception to not talk outgoing for Gaga Slonina, their 18-year-old goalkeeper who just got a $10 million, could be over $15 million with incentives deal to move to Chelsea. He will remain with the Fire for the remainder of the season and then in January report to Chelsea. People are still hopeful, especially fans, especially my kids who have loved seeing Gaga Slonina in net, seeing him live, and really just saying the name, Gaga, as much as they possibly can. There's hope that he gets loaned back for 2023, but if not, the Fire are in good shape with U.S. Youth National Team goalkeeper Chris Brady also on the Chicago Fire roster. The other move that they made was sending Ford Chinonso Ofer to Montreal for $325,000 in GAM, which would be good enough. But they also get $275,000 in additional GAM based on performances, and there's a sell-in percentage. That is damn good business by the Chicago Fire, considering Chinonso Ofer could not affect the game against Union Omaha in the U.S. Open Cup. So that's good business by the Fire. And as our friend John Donovan told me separately, like, maybe Montreal is just giving them back a little bit for the great deal they got for Jordy Mihailovic. Now, FC Cincinnati has also made some moves. They bring in Sergio Santos in a trade with Philadelphia. You know how key Santos was for Philly, but they decided to move him and bring in some other players. And Santos is going to be able to have an impact. He's got that history in the league. And how great would it be to see Santos go up against Philly, his former team, in a playoff match? That'll bring some energy and maybe a little chippiness as well. The other name of note, Harris Madunian, and kind of an MLS household name, ended up mutually terminating the contract with the club. And also, here's what's interesting. And fans, let me know. Viewers, listeners, let me know. Because everyone's reported that Matt Miazga, the U.S. international, the Chelsea part of their lone army, that Matt Miazga has been signed. You know, a great defensive pickup for Cincinnati. Maybe they can stop these 4-4 games that they've been having. But I haven't seen it on MLS Soccer's transfer tracker or anything official on their news. So what do you guys know about Matt Miazga? What's he doing out there, right? Is he coming to Cincinnati? Everyone has reported it, but MLSsoccer.com's transfer tracker. Anyway, Colorado is next up on our block here. They have made a couple moves, signing midfielder Ralph Priso in a trade with Toronto, as well as picking up Felipe Gutierrez on loan from a club in the Chilean league, Universidad Católica. Now, you guys might remember Felipe Gutierrez because he spent several seasons in Sporting Kansas City, and again, is coming off a season in the Chilean league. So he might be able to help them, and the fact that he doesn't have really much time to get acclimated because he's already been a part of the league. But also, Colorado, if you look on the right-hand column, you'll notice a few common names there on the outgoing. So they've definitely made some moves, and hey, their recent run of form, though, 2 games, 9 goals, guess they might be doing something that they like. Columbus Crew is the next up, since we're going alphabetically here. And, you know, thankfully the league organizes it for me, so I don't have to sing my ABCs for you. But Columbus Crew with one of the biggest signings in Cucho Hernandez. He has been doing it all for them since coming in. Phenomenal signing from Watford. They also brought in Jason Russell Rowe from Crew 2 and defender Muhammad Farsi from Crew 2. So they're doing everything right, bringing in big names from overseas as well as promoting some of their academy players, which is fantastic, and how you continue consistent success, or at least consistent results, in the MLS. Also, the other big news outgoing, Zardes and Miguel Berry in trades out of Columbus. Let's look at a few comments here before we continue on. And Brother BKL says Tati on loan to La Liga. And he says, we literally didn't have any transfers between NYCFC. We still got the Brazilians and Matrita on loan for the third time. So, yeah, we're going to get to NYCFC. They really didn't do much. Red Bull Insider says the transfer window was what I expected from Red Bulls. We did nothing really. That makes sense. They're relying on youth, their academies, and their system rather than big name signings. That's just been Red Bull's MO. And we'll get to them in a second. Jay Jardim with a couple of great comments. Pass the ball to the Italians. Yep. TFC definitely has resurrected that Will Ferrell line. What was it? Kicking and Screaming was the movie? Yeah, with their signings lately. And he says, Chicago, am I seeing this right? You are, man. They are above the playoff line, right? Man, there should be some great Chicago TFC rivalry games. Hopefully both those teams can be consistent in the future. Now let's continue running down the transfer window. FC Dallas is next up on our alphabetical list, and they made a couple moves. Nothing huge, just bringing in former LA Galaxy, former New England Revolution, and probably former USMNT midfielder Sebastian Legit in a trade from New England. Now, listening to the Extra Time League podcast, they were saying that, you know, Legit did not play well in New England because he was being asked to be a facilitator, a creative type of playmaker. But really his main role, and when he excelled for the Galaxy and for the U.S. men's national team, was kind of being that late runner, that second or third option in the offensive zone. So maybe he can get back to that with FC Dallas, especially when you already have Ferreira and Areola as kind of your 1-2 punch up top. Next up, DC United made some moves. Not only did they bring in Wayne Rooney as their new coach, let's see, Miguel Berry comes in on a trade with Columbus. Ravel Morrison comes in on a free midfielder. Victor Paulsen, another midfielder, on a transfer from Schalke over in the Bundesliga. They get David Ochoa, goalkeeper from Real Salt Lake, and probably the biggest name and the one who's going to have the most immediate impact for DC United, forward Christian Benteke, on a transfer in from Crystal Palace. If you don't watch the EPL and don't know who Benteke is, he is kind of a guy who is just always around the box, always putting shots on frame, just over the bar, just around the crossbar, always threatening, always harassing defenders. As an Everton supporter, and one time there were rumors a few years back that they were trying to steal him away from Palace. I would have loved to see it. But he's a 31-year-old striker, and in 162 games for Palace, he's got 35 goals. Last season was really his outlier with just a couple, so I think Palace is ready to move on from him. But he did have a couple double-digit goal seasons in the Premier League, which should translate well to him jumping in with DC. People have said that Wayne Rooney likes to play a two-striker system, so are we going to see Toxi Fontas and Christian Benteke up top with Miguel Berry as an option off the bench? Maybe. It could be interesting to see how Rooney lines these guys up. Next, the Houston Dynamo, also with just a couple moves over the summer transfer window. They bring in forward Nelson Quiñones on loan from Once Caldas. I actually didn't even look up where Once Caldas is, you know, what league that is. Let's do a quick little Google search here so we can expand our soccer knowledge here. Once Caldas in Colombia. So bringing in a Colombian player, which has been very popular for MLS lately. Also, Beto Avila back in May comes up from Dynamo too. But the biggest signing has been Hector Herrera, the Mexican international. They signed him back in March, and he finally made his way into MLS during the summer transfer window. Now, you'd think a team like LAFC, who's at top of all the standings and the favorite to win the double, wouldn't have to do much. But you know what? They are setting a new standard here in MLS where they are continuing to improve. Look at all these signings they've made. Look at who they've signed. Other than Chiellini, Bale, and re-signing Carlos Vela, they bring in midfielder Sebastian Mendes in a trade from Orlando, as well as forward Dennis Bouanga on a transfer from Saint-Étienne over in France. So who is this Dennis Bouanga character that everyone is so hyped up about? He's a 27-year-old who can play forward and midfield, probably more of an attacking midfield role for LAFC because of just the talent on the wings that they have. He's got 26 goals and 13 assists over three seasons for Saint-Étienne. So he probably wasn't getting a lot of minutes over there. And that's why he's going to come in, slot in very nicely for LAFC. And if they turn him into a star here and a goal scoring or assist machine, I'm sure they'll be able to sell him on and make some money. Also, the LAFC traded away Danny Masovski and Ismail Tujuri-Shradi. And LAFC is probably the only team who could trade those two guys and get better. Right. That's what we're working with here for the black and gold. Now, the LA Galaxy tried making a couple moves, looking for some immediate impact. They signed midfielder Gaston Brugman from Parma, but their biggest one is Ricky Puig on a transfer from Barcelona. Now, Puig could be a season-changing signing for the Galaxy. Some people are saying the dude's a washout from Barcelona, which is ridiculous to call a 22-year-old a washout of anything in life, right? Especially a soccer player, someone who that Barcelona was so high on. It's just he wasn't getting minutes with the first team. Maybe he didn't fit in with Javi, their new coaches and former player, as we all know, new system, or they were just trying to make some cap space or try and, you know, move some money off their books, whatever you call it. It's not cap space. That's not a worry of Barcelona, but the principles are the same, right? Move some money off the books there, but it's a great signing. It could be a season-changing move for the Galaxy. Now, continuing down, Inter Miami had a few new signings. Obviously, we saw everything they did in the offseason, a few of the things that they had to do due to their roster violations. They bring in Corentin Jean from RC Lens, as they also, as we know, sign Alejandro Pozuelo in a trade from TFC, and those dividends are already paying off. So Miami going for offense. Look to see them try and ramp up the offense as the season goes on. Next team, their summer transfer moves. Minnesota United brings in defender Alan Benitez from Cerro Porteño, forward Mender Garcia from Once Caldas, again, another Colombian signing. They bring in midfielder, here's the big one, Jonathan Gonzalez on loan from Monterrey in Liga MX. Now, that's your headline, right? Minnesota United gets former U.S. youth national team player for $50,000 in discovery rights from the Colorado Rapids on loan from Monterrey. That is like the most MLS headline you could possibly come up with, right? Now, if for you U.S. national team fans, you remember Jonathan Gonzalez was the one player that was being recruited by both sides heavily, huge upside, had a couple appearances for Mexico, ended up committing to Mexico, committing to El Tri, but has not gotten a lot of time with Monterrey lately. So hopefully, for Mexico's sake, Minnesota United can work him into the rotation and really help develop him a little bit before he goes back to shine with Monterrey. Perfect move for both teams, right? Now, looking at Montreal, not really anything in the summer window. They bring in Chinonso Ofar, like we said, that trade from Chicago, and really getting Jordi Mihailovic back and healthy was essentially their mid-season summer transfer DP kind of signing. So let's keep an eye on Jordi as he gets back to 110% match fitness. Looking at Nashville, a couple moves that Nashville made. Shaq Moore comes in from Tenerife, the U.S. national team player there. Supposed to be helping Nashville's offense out, but we've seen them a little stagnant up until that TFC game, even though they lost 4-3. And they get Jacob Schaffelberg on loan from Toronto. So a lot of fans in Toronto did not expect Schaffelberg to get loaned out. They didn't like how that was handled. Make sure you go follow all your Toronto news sources. And you know what? Why don't you shoot a tweet at SOP Soccer, and Mike will be able to help you out there. Jay Jardine will be able to help you out there with all of that. So Toronto making a few moves. I'm sorry. Nashville, that's it. Totally lost my train of thought there. Nashville making a few moves to try and bolster up a little bit of their offense, despite signing Shaq Moore. We all know that he is more of a wingback than a true defender or fullback. Next up, New England making a few moves. We talked about them moving Sebastian Legit out and bringing in Giacomo Veroni on a transfer from Juventus. They also signed defender Christian McCoon in a trade from Charlotte, and they picked up Ismail Tajiri Shradi in a trade from LAFC. His experience is going to be invaluable to New England, who tries to get back on track and get back into the playoff picture. Again, someone who's not going to need to adjust to the league, just kind of understand how Bruce Arena wants to run things. They also brought in goalkeeper Clement Diop in a trade from Inter Miami, which is interesting to me because you look at their current goalkeeper, they've got Petrovic, who's been starting. He's taking up an international roster spot. Now, the conventional wisdom is don't use international roster spots on goalkeepers. You can find good goalkeeping talent here in the United States. So maybe that's what Diop is he's just going to take up a domestic senior spot rather than Petrovic's international spot. But to trade and have someone replace your starter, does New England have that much faith in Petrovic? I don't know. If any of you New England fans out there have any further insight, please let us know at SOP on Twitter, sonsofapitchsoccer@gmail.com, or in the comments section after this video has come out. Now we're down to New York City FC, and as we had talked about a little bit in the chat, nothing over the summer, just the transfer for Tati and getting Hebert back healthy. Red Bulls make a couple moves. They sign midfielder Steven Serwada, coming up from Red Bull 2. They bring in Kyle Duncan, a defender, on loan from KV Ostende, and they sign forward Elias Manuel on loan from Grêmio in Brazil's second division. He's a 20-year-old Brazilian forward. Maybe he can be the true striker that Red Bulls are looking for, but we will see. Orlando City also had a couple moves to try and address their offensive woes. They bring in Nicolas Joachini, the U.S. international from Cannes. They signed forward Ivan Angulo from Palmeiras, as well as midfielder Wilder Cartagena on loan from Al-Ittihad Kalba in the United Arab Emirates. So looking to bring in offense. We haven't seen it yet, Orlando. Maybe you can get it going after the All-Star game. The Union make a couple moves. They sign for Julian Carranza on transfer from Inter Miami. They bring in midfielder Richard Odata on a transfer from Red Star Belgrade over in Serbia, as well as signing defender Abasa Aramayo. Nope, let's try that again. Aramaya. Yeah, I'll figure that one out eventually. Let's get him some playing time first. So Philadelphia, again, looking on some more offensive type of moves, trying to bring in some more firepower. That's been the theme if you've looked at these signings. MLS teams going for offense. Now, Portland, speaking of a team that could use some offense, their biggest signing was defender Juan David Mosquera on a transfer from Independiente Medellin. And that's about it for Portland. They're just kind of resting on their tactics and their veterans moving forward. Real Salt Lake brings in forward Danny Masofsky on a trade from LAFC. They sign Brian Ojeda from Nottingham Forest on loan, as well as defender Brian Oviedo signing him. You may remember Brian Oviedo. That's a name you should know if you watched any USMNT World Cup qualifying. He's a Costa Rican international. His latest club was Copenhagen, but before that was over in the English Premier League playing with Sunderland and Everton. So for you EPL fans, for you CONCACAF World Cup fans, you know Oviedo. He's a 32-year-old defender who should be able to help lock things down for RSL, bringing in defense before a playoff push. Interesting move by RSL. And there you can see some of the other moves that they have made over the last several weeks. Now, San Jose goes defense, right? If you're building a team, you start in the back. You start with the spine, the center backs, and some solid defenders, right? So this suggests to me that San Jose is in rebuilding mode. They're not looking at the offense. They're not looking to bring guys in to make a playoff push. They may probably sell Cade Cowan in the near future to try and bring some money in and help rebuild, like we said, that back line and the spine of the team. They signed defender Carlos Acapo on a free, as well as get defender Rodriguez on loan from Grêmio in Brazil. Seattle didn't do anything over the summer transfer window as far as players coming in. They're just trying to get healthy and recover from that Champions League run, as well as get back into the playoff picture. Now we have Sporting Kansas City, well, with a couple signings back in June, nothing really big this summer. They brought in midfielder Eric Tommy from Germany and forward William Agata on transfer from Hapoel Jerusalem. So again, going offense, you can kind of see it, right? Not only is MLS a very offense-minded league, but kind of the traditional way to build your team is homegrowns and domestics on defense and international talent on offense. That's, again, the traditional mindset for it. So as we get into our last couple teams here, TFC, what did they do this summer transfer window? You may have heard a few headlines about them. Defender Domenico Crescito comes in. They bring in midfielder Mark Anthony Kay on a trade from the Rapids. They get Federico Bernardeschi, as well as this guy Lorenzo Insigne, who they signed earlier and finally shows up in the summer transfer window. He was signed back in January, if you recall. They also bring in household TFC name Daniil Henry, defender, as well as Richie Larea on loan from Nottingham Forest. So do you think Toronto thinks that they can make the playoffs? And once you make the playoffs, anything can happen, especially with those guys we just talked about. There's been tons of press and tons of coverage on TFC, so I won't get into it too much. But we have seen the capabilities of these signings in TFC in a couple of games, dropping 4 and 5 goals, right? We've also seen them still need time to gel, like that Canadian Championship game against Vancouver, like the prior game before the big win at Nashville. So they need time to gel, that's for sure. Speaking of Vancouver, our last team on the transfer roundup, making a few signings, trading for Julian Gressel from DC United, getting a great wingback. Some say he's the best wingback in the league. And they also signed midfielder Alessandro Schopf from Germany. He's been playing in the Bundesliga most of his career, as well as some of the lower divisions. He's a 28-year-old Austrian midfielder. Now, I don't know his style of play, but looking at his statistics, this is a more defensive signing because he doesn't score a lot of goals. Besides, Vancouver already has Gold, Cavallini, Gressel, and White. So I'm guessing this is a defensive signing for Vancouver as they look to try and push into the playoff spot there. So, wow, guys, we are just coming up to an hour. I am losing my voice. We've had some viewers jump in. We've had some viewers jump out. It's been a crazy, crazy time in MLS, and I'm glad we get to round it all up with you guys here. I'm just going to leave you with a few final thoughts, right? Be sure to like the video, subscribe to the channel, share the link, share the channel. Send us a message on Twitter at SOP Soccer. If you are at games, whether here or abroad, send us a photo. We'll feature it. That way we can see fans from all across the country and bring them into part of this conversation. We thank you all for your time, for your efforts, for your listenings, for your contributions in the chats, as well as financially. As a last reminder, the All-Star Game, August 10th. So hopefully you guys are listening to this chat before that, as you can impress all your friends watching the All-Star Game with your transfer knowledge. MLS League games resume August 13th. Everyone, it has been great talking with you again. Enjoy the All-Star Game. Can't wait to see how those plays from the Skills Challenge work out. And we'll be back with our picks and predictions video Wednesday night, as well as the weekly recap in 1 week's time next Monday. Guys, have a great evening and rest of your week. Hey, soccer fans, this is Nick once again for SOP Soccer Central. And as I've been doing the last few weeks, my own version of the post-credits scene that we've all become accustomed to throughout the movie industry. Taking a little bit of a break from my MLS memorabilia and collection to show a couple jerseys. First of all, Indy 11 from the USL. Fantastic organization and club. Back, you know, they were with the NISA. They've moved up through USL divisions, and I got this jersey before I went to a game a couple seasons back at Lucas Oil Stadium down in Indy, and Indy 11 holding it down in the USL Championship. Great team, great organization. Actually, we were talking about transfers today. Tyler Pascher from Houston was let go. He's a former Indy 11 player there. Also, my most recent jersey, my Detroit City jersey, got a lot of family in the Detroit area, was lucky enough to get up and catch a game this season where they beat Red Bulls 2. Man, those fans are rabid. Great game at the stadium there in Detroit City. And fortunately for me, it was craft beer night. So it was discount craft beer all night, and they had the food trucks cranking out the snacks too. So not only is the product on the field phenomenal for Detroit City, but the fan experience is great as well. So wanted to share that with my little post-credit scenes that we've been doing here. Thank you all for continuing to watch and support SOP Soccer Central. You all have a great night.